Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. We come now in our exposition of the book of Proverbs to Proverbs chapter 29, verse 18. But first, did you know that you can listen to current and previous episodes of The Final Word even while on the go through your smartphone? In iTunes, search for The Final Word Radio Jim Andrews and click subscribe. Don't use iTunes or have an iPhone? Use the RSS link on our website to have The Final Word delivered to your favorite podcast app on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Visit our website, thefinalwordradio.com, for these instructions and direct links accessing our podcast through iTunes or using RSS. We hope this capability is useful to you. Now Proverbs 29, verse 18. Solomon says, "Where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained. But happy is he who keeps the law of God, that is." What an insight. This proverb reminds me of the theme of the late, great Francis Schaeffer's book, "God is there, and he is not silent." The minute man cuts loose from the moorings of divine revelation in his thinking, that person starts to drift out into the sea of lawlessness. In the fog, moral vertigo sets in, and relativism follows, where there is no longer a sense of fixed right and wrong. In that atmosphere, anything can now be rationalized, because without revelation, which is what Solomon is talking about, where there is no vision, where there is no word from the prophets of God, the people are unrestrained. And happy is he who keeps the law. Without revelation, I say again, anything can be excused and rationalized, for no one can say in that kind of environment for sure what is right and what is wrong. And there is no longer anything but just a vague sense of accountability, if that, to God above. We are living in such an environment today. There is no vision. There is no word from the Lord. People don't read their Bibles. In many cases, children are not even aware of the most fundamental things. I just ran into some children, American children, here in a nice American suburb, clueless about what Good Friday is, clueless about the story of the birth of Jesus, clueless about the crucifixion. It's hard to believe, but that's the post-Christian era that we're living in. People in general are just cut loose from divine revelation in their living and in their thinking. They don't know it, and certainly their lives are in no way framed by it. And in an atmosphere like that, what is good can become evil, and what is evil can become good, and we see it all around us. This is precisely what happened in the late 60s and the early 70s of the 20th century, when the nation experienced the full force of what David Horowitz has termed the destructive generation. And we, in fact, are still suffering the effects of that generation wherein there is no revelation, functionally speaking. And because of that, the fact that there's no revelation, functionally speaking, they and their heirs have cast off all restraint. That is, they literally run wild. Where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained. But happy is he who keeps the law. However, the path of blessing, God's blessing, remains wide open. And that option, all who are wise follow. And that is a life lived in accordance with the light, the compass of divine revelation, a life lived within the framework of God's moral law. We come now to Proverbs 29:19. Solomon says, a slave will not be instructed by words, that is, words alone, as is inserted in our NASB to clarify the sense, for though he understands, the slave that is, there will be no response. This proverb reflects the times when there were masters and bond slaves, a social structure that no longer exists in most of the modern world, thanks to the gentling of Christian influence on societies everywhere. It is a comment on what Kidner calls the slave mentality in any era or culture. And this mentality was pervasive in the slave culture of the old American South prior to the Civil War. And the mentality is indicative of the harmful or deleterious effects of the institution of slavery on human character. Whenever adults are deprived of any incentive for taking initiative, whenever they are deprived of any opportunity for bettering themselves or for improving conditions for their families, deprived of all responsibility for making provision for themselves, what you do is arrest normal psychological and character development. And what you get is an adult who in every way but physical attribute remains pretty much like a child. And you reap a spirit, a human spirit, seeded with resentment of authority, plus an aversion to work that produces little for his own advantage, but only for his master. In that kind of situation, slaves had to be disciplined pretty much like children for whom talk therapy has limited usefulness. When one hits upon those stubborn streaks. There is, however, a principle here which transcends the cultural phenomenon of human slavery. And it is this. People who work for others, that is, those who are employees, especially those in low-level jobs, that aren't rewarding either financially or in terms of emotional satisfaction, will tend by the nature of the case to become shirkers and do as little as possible for a day's pay. That is just human nature. And whoever has the job of supervising folks in that kind of circumstance must learn that fact and know that sometimes sterner measures are required to motivate the unmotivated. Sometimes a person has to be sacked to get the attention of others. Pay may have to be docked, or employees disciplined in some other fashion, painful enough to them to get them to stick to business. Proverbs 29, verse 20. Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? Solomon says there's more hope for a fool than for him. Again, a recurrent theme in the book of Proverbs. And you'll remember that I've told you that when these themes seem redundant, it is on purpose. Repetition is a whole lot of instruction, and some things begin to register. And, of course, in my life, and you'll probably say the same thing, I've heard something over and over and over again, and then there comes a time when I go from what I call uh-huh to aha. All of a sudden, I get it. It sticks. Well, some of us may have the habit of moving our lips before we put our brains in gear. I knew a pastor once who had the bad habit of talking before he even knew what he wanted or needed to say. I always described him in terms of speech as a guy who was always circling like a bird of prey in search of an idea. He would just vaporize endlessly, hoping that thought would mercifully come to meet his words. And worse than that is the person whose emotions outrun his judgment, and he spouts off before measuring his speech or thinking about the harmful or hurtful impact of his words on himself or others or both. This is a terrible habit It is characteristic of a fool, and it is one so difficult to arrest that the sage says, in hyperbole, that it's easier to train a fool to wisdom than to train a rash tongue to restraint. Again, one does not have to be a certified fool in general to partake of some foolish excesses, but it gives one incentive who aspires to be wise to understand that when we have certain habits, those habits are characteristic of a fool and give us extra motivation to avoid them. And this is one foolish habit, to be hasty in our words. It takes enormous discipline to break it, yet it holds also enormous potential to wreck our train as surely as being an outright fool. So, Solomon's advice is let no one take this rash habit lightly or rationalize it as the winsome habit of being direct and saying what one means and meaning what one says. It is a virtue, in most respects, to be that kind, the kind of person who is noted for saying what one means and meaning what one says. But that does not necessarily have to correlate or be equal to speaking rashly. But some people confuse the two and justify vice under the good name of virtue. And then they wonder why their life ran off the social tracks. What happened is they died socially of hoof and mouth disease. We must be very careful of that, being too hasty to speak up. I noticed that in my days of growing up in West Virginia. By nature, I don't know exactly why, but mountain people are unpretentious. They're people who tend to speak their mind, tend to be direct, and as I say, they'll tell you what they mean, and they will generally mean what they say. Now, that's a generalization, of course. But some would take that, as I said, too far. So far, I think it was a virtue, unless you're supposed to be a diplomat. But many were just hasty in their words and would spout off in their directness and never stop and think and measure what they were going to say. That's not a virtue. That is a vice. And Solomon says there's more hope for a fool than for a person whose tongue is too quick to spout off. That brings us to verse 21. Solomon says, he who pampers his slave from childhood will in the end find him to be a son. To nurture and care for a child is not the same as pampering a child. To pamper is to spoil. It is no different with a slave or an employee or a soldier or an athlete. In any home or organization, there has to be top-down discipline or there will be bottom-up grief. That is not to say that those who are in charge of servants or employees should not be sensitive and compassionate about the needs of those who work and sweat for them. By all means, they should. But at the same time, a leader must recognize that servants and employees, if accustomed to pampering and low expectations, will descend to those expectations and will be unproductive and useless. Instead of gain, there will be only grief. Here is a lesson in business administration. There has to be regular reward for performance and consistent penalization for lack thereof. Verse 22. An angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression. Again, one of those recurrent themes. Hot heads make for hot times, Solomon is telling us. Uncontrolled, unbridled passion is a breeding ground for dissension and transgression in the home, in the school, in the workplace, you name it. So if you want to keep the peace, you have to lower the temperature. When I was teaching in Bible college and seminary, I used to warn pastoral students about what I called an Evel Knievel factory. Some of you will recall Evel Knievel was the famous stuntman who, with his daring attempt to leap across the Snake River Canyon on his motorcycle, came up a little short, almost lethally short. Well, the Evel Knievel factor, as I termed it, was some lethal flaw in an otherwise gifted person or stellar performance. That was the critical difference between failure and success. A lot of hotheads have outstanding intelligence. They have great skills. But this one flaw, this hot-headedness, is lethal enough, despite their gifts, despite their spectacular performance in many ways, it's lethal enough to wreck a marriage, and it's lethal enough to create dissension and to kill forward momentum in any organization or enterprise. And if you take somebody like that on, they're going to be high maintenance, to say the least. You'd better be prepared for the fallout, because their liabilities will most likely outweigh, in the long term, their assets. Although I'm sure there are exceptions, you will find a lot of folk out there who call themselves consultants of various stripes. And many business people will tell you, as they've told me, that no small number of these consultant types had to settle for that niche because they were just hot-headed persons who just created too many ripples, not over principle, but over their inability to control their emotions. They may be very smart, they may be very gifted, and as I say, please don't put all of them in that bag, but too many of them fit that description, according to what I'm told, at least. It's not just the social friction that the hot-headed, hot-tempered man causes. The angry man stirs up strife, and he abounds in transgression. It's not just the friction they cause, but in the process, they just commit a lot of plain old sin. And I've seen a lot of them up close and personal. Verse 29:23, Solomon says, "A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor." The first line of this couplet is another way of saying pride goes before the fall. And the second line reminds us that if it is true that God will abase the proud, it is also true that God likes to exalt the humble. Pride is a hateful vice, both to man and God. And if there is anything that will cause others to lie in ambush for us, and look for an opportunity to take us down a few pegs, it is the appearance of cockiness or pride. By the same token, if people have a choice, they would prefer any day to honor someone who seems genuinely humble, as does the Lord himself. There's a confidence that some mistake for pride, and there's another kind of pride that some mistake for humility. But I'll tell you something. God knows the difference, and he will regularly humble the proud, and he will exalt the humble. Now we come to verse 24. He who is a partner with a thief hates his own life. He hears the oath, but tells nothing. This particular proverb is difficult to penetrate. There are a number of these throughout the book. Some scholars take it to mean that when a partner of a thief refuses, when called upon in court, to give up his partner or rat him out, that person is to all intents and purposes a moral accomplice of the one he shields from legal jeopardy, that is, in the sight of God. Verse 25, "The fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted." You know, folks, many times in life we find ourselves on the horns of a dilemma. On the one side, there's the fear of man whom we can see. At one point in their lives, Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, who believed in Jesus, were Secret Service disciples. They just couldn't come out of the closet for fear of what they might suffer from their peers. And then there's the fear of God, whom we do not see. In Matthew chapter 10, the Lord advised us not to fear men, but to fear God. Man can only do you so much harm, the Lord said, but God can consign you to hell. Fear God. Human nature tends to yield to the fear of man, the clearest and most obvious danger. Faith calls upon us to ignore what man can do to us and fear God, who can damage us far more than any human, if he is displeased and indignant with us. Remember what the Apostle Peter told the Sanhedrin? Judge for yourselves whether it is right to obey God or obey men. In the time of Daniel, his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, faced that very dilemma with the choice that Nebuchadnezzar imposed upon them. Bow down and worship the image that he had created, or burn in a fiery furnace. They had a choice of turn their backs on God or fall down and worship that absurd image, or be tossed in Nebuchadnezzar's furnace. They chose to fear God rather than the king. And that's a choice that we will face many times in life. We're coming to the place in this society, I think, where professional people out there are going to be so hemmed in with political correctness, having to sign things that commit us to courses of action that we as believers could in no way endorse, to teach things that we do not believe, to push things, support things that we cannot support. And if we fail to do so, then we lose our jobs. And I'm afraid that it's coming to that point faster than we think. In some cases, it's already gotten there. People, though they may be excellent professionals at what they do and be duly certified and more than certified, highly, highly qualified, will not be able to sustain their employment because, as Christians, if they fear God, they simply can't go the way that political correctness requires them to go, to say, to support, to embrace what they're required to embrace by the cultural police. But the fear of man brings a snare. But he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. And that's what we have to place in the backs of our mind and on our frontal lobe and fear the Lord. Verse 26, many seek the ruler's favor, seek the favor of the people in power. But justice for man comes from the Lord. This proverb follows from the last. If given a choice of taking their problem for resolution to some human power or authority, or taking our issues to God for solution, the average person prefers to take their problems to man whom they can see rather than to God whom they can't. In reality, neither the power nor justice offered by man's court equals the power of the justice available in God. There are times when it is necessary to appeal for redress to human authority, of course. But the righteous are always at an advantage when they opt to put their case before the Lord. That should never be seen as a desperate measure, but a wise move to leave justice to him. Many times in life, for various good reason, we cannot and should not take our case public or to the judicial system, but just refer the matter to the highest court of all, a just God who sees and knows all, and wait on him to adjudicate the matter in his time. May the Lord judge between you and me is a fearful thing to hear if one is on the wrong side and doing nothing to rectify matters. Verse 27, an unjust man is abominable to the righteous, and he who is upright in the way is abominable to the wicked. Here's the culture war in a nutshell. Darkness detests light, light detests darkness. Righteous people, that is, those who adhere to God's way, hate dishonesty because their moral sympathies are with God and the dishonest are repugnant to him. On the other hand, those who are of a wicked disposition detest the upright. That is life. People of integrity make the dishonest types feel worse about themselves, just like those at a drunken party dislike the sober person who refuses to drink with them and make a fool of themselves. Well, dear friends, thank you for joining us today. God bless you, and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.